We're intervening with patients here, navigating any one of a number of really complex health and social, just life challenges. Sometimes we're intervening in a moment of real personal or acute health crisis, and we really need to earn their trust. And so being local, being able to meet in person, being able to offer a resource, a referral that isn't something they could just Google on their own, goes a really long way to being able to earn that trust and ultimately earn the right to be able to deliver services and deliver outcomes.
That was Jeremy Schiffberg talking about the importance of hiring local care teams to earn patient trust. Schiffberg is a vice president at Waymark, a public benefit corporation that works with Medicaid managed care organizations to improve access to care and health outcomes for beneficiaries. The company has teams of community health workers, therapists, pharmacists, and care coordinators. It also works very closely with local clinicians. In this podcast, with Oliver Wyman's Dan Schellenbarger, Schiffberg and Hannah Ratcliffe, Waymark's Vice President of Care Model and Quality, dive into the opportunities and challenges in meeting the needs of Medicaid patients. Ratcliffe shares insights from a peer-reviewed study that published last year in the New England Journal of Medicine, showing that Waymark's interventions reduced emergency department visits and hospitalizations. It also improved access to social services. The Oliver Wyman Health Podcast is brought to you by the global management consulting firm Oliver Wyman. For more insights on the business of transforming healthcare, visit our online publication, health.oliverwyman.com. Now we pick things up with Ratcliffe talking about Waymark's founding and its mission.
Waymark was founded really to improve access to care and the health outcomes for patients who are receiving Medicaid benefits. And the impetus for this was kind of twofold. So there's direct experience of our founding physicians who have been providing care to low-income patients in FQHCs through street medicine and really seeing the systemic challenges that both patients and providers face to kind of providing and accessing that high-quality care. And at the same time, there's this huge body of evidence that demonstrates how to reduce acute care utilization, how to improve quality in Medicaid. And yet so many Medicaid programs are struggling to achieve these outcomes. A lot of that is due to a limited community health workforce, a lack of technology that enables that workforce, and really fundamentally a lack of sustainable financing to build that workforce and the technology. So many of these programs are grant funded and just can't sustain momentum over time. And so that's really where Waymark is designed to come in. So we combine our predictive technology and our multidisciplinary community-based care teams to help Medicaid patients reduce their acute care utilization, improve quality, and ultimately improve their health and well-being. The thing that makes our model really unique is this combination of community-based care teams who are really kind of on the ground, who understand the communities they serve. They're from those communities. And the fact that they're guided by a technology that helps them understand who to outreach and when to do that to ensure that patients aren't ending up in the hospital or the emergency department. So it's really people enabled by our technology, not just a technology or not just product. And we're currently serving communities across Washington State and Virginia and have achieved some really strong outcomes over our first 2 years of service, which we're excited to dig into.
All right, so let's dig into it. Like, how do your care teams actually operate on the ground? Where are you really enhancing and finding great leverage? And really curious how that interplay, happens with existing providers who are in some cases seeing patients, in other cases, just trying to keep tabs on patients.
There's a few pieces that make up our care delivery model on the ground. So one is, like Anna mentioned, we have local multidisciplinary teams. Those teams are made up of community health workers, care coordinators, licensed therapists, pharmacy technicians, and clinical pharmacists. So those local teams wrap around primary care providers and their patients to give additional clinical and social support outside of the clinic. So we partner really closely with the primary care practices to essentially extend their reach, provide extra capacity to support the Medicaid population. We are focused exclusively on serving the Medicaid population in the local areas in which our teams operate. And so I think that's been a key enabler for our success. It means that our workflows, our technology can all be really custom tailor-made for the populations and the communities that we're serving. The second piece is we have a kind of a hybrid value-based care delivery model leveraging evidence-based care pathways. So we use a mix of in-person and virtual services. Our community health worker teams are in community meeting patients, at a hospital, in public settings, at the home, accompanying them to visits, and then is supported also by virtual care that the rest of our care delivery team is delivering. And so that enables us to meet patients where they are. And we find a lot of patients prefer phone or video. We also find that we have higher success rates when we're able to meet folks in the field, at the home, at the hospital, or in person, one place or another. And it allows us to do whatever it takes to reach hard-to-reach patients for whom phone or text may not be viable. We operate in value-based contracts. So the last piece is technology that's tailor-made for our population. So I think one thing that sets our model apart a bit is that we have a kind of a custom risk algorithm we call Signal. It's really focused on the rising risk patient population. So a lot of off-the-shelf risk stratification algorithms in the market are focused on high-cost claimants, patients who have already been identified as high cost or high need. Our model is really focused upstream of that. And so that allows us to ideally target those patients who are or maybe are yet to have the avoidable hospitalization or ED visit, but may be likely to have one of those kinds of healthcare exacerbations in the near future. Most critically, it means that we're able to intervene before there's an exacerbation, really improve healthcare outcomes. It also means that models focus on high cost claimants, and there's a natural kind of regression to the mean as it relates to cost savings. So by intervening a little bit upstream, we're able to deliver a higher impact both clinically and in terms of health outcomes, but also in terms of cost savings for our MCO and provider partners.
Jeremy, talk to me a little bit about how that works. Getting upstream is like the golden fleece in healthcare. So the ability to do that is huge. I'm sure it requires EMR integration, data sharing, perhaps even engagement of those members before they become patients, if you will. Talk to me about where you guys find those attachment points and how you're able to get upstream.
Yeah, so a lot of that comes back to Signal, our rising risk algorithm. So the algorithm is trained on a national Medicaid data set and incorporating social determinants of health data and other community health data. That means that most of the outreach that we're doing proactively to the patient population is outreach that we are doing proactively because we've identified a patient as someone who's likely to benefit from our care delivery model. And so that means we're not waiting for a referral, although we welcome them, but we're not waiting for a referral. We're not waiting for a hospitalization. And so the vast majority of the patients that we serve and the outreach that we're doing is focused on that rising risk population. It means that we're often reaching patients at a moment where they're not sure why they're being reached, right? And so that makes the job a little bit more difficult sometimes for our care delivery teams in that they have to really explain who we are, why we do what we do, how we can help.
And then curious kind of the mix of what the nature of the interventions that it is that you then provide. How much of that is clinical versus how much of that might be more, you know, in the realm of social determinants and helping them get ahead of either behaviors or other needs that they might have that are going to lead to those exacerbations. So any thoughts on kind of the balance of clinical and non-clinical needs?
What we try to do is be really patient-centered. And so have patients help guide us to what's most important to them, what they think is the biggest barrier to their health. That often starts out as a more kind of socially related need, whether that's access to food or housing insecurity, transportation needs to be able to get around, childcare needs, those types of things. We also do have a set of kind of core clinical pathways focused on common chronic conditions like diabetes, hypertension, heart failure that many of these patients, those are conditions many of them are struggling with. And we're really focused on making sure that they're able to kind of manage their care, advocate for their care, connect into their PCP and the right specialists for ensuring their kind of ongoing support and stability once we're no longer working really actively with them. We also have therapy teams that can provide behavioral and mental health support for patients who are interested in that. And our pharmacy team is obviously doing a lot around medication access.
Because of the care teams being local, there's a familiarity with the services, the community context, the organizations that might be able to help contribute in, you know, avoiding some of these exacerbations. Maybe just speak for a minute to the role that, like, having that local awareness, what we think that adds to the model.
A big part of what our care teams do, especially upfront as they establish a relationship with a patient, is try and establish trust and rapport. You know, we're intervening with patients here, navigating any one of a number of really complex health and social, just life challenges. Sometimes we're intervening in a moment of real personal or acute kind of health crisis, and we really need to earn their trust. And so being local, being able to meet in person, being able to offer a resource, a referral that isn't something they could just Google on their own goes a really long way to being able to earn that trust and ultimately earn the right to be able to deliver services and deliver outcomes.
Let's get to the results. As you mentioned at the outset, you have been at this early stages, but have enough data now to kind of look back in arrears and see what the impact has been. Walk us through what you found and the results from the New England Journal of Medicine study.
Yeah, so last fall, we published a peer-reviewed study in the New England Journal of Medicine Catalyst Journal, evaluating the impact of our model in 2023, which was our first year of service. The study included about 64,000 patients who were covered by the two Medicaid health plans that we were serving in 2023. And those patients were assigned to about 2,300 PCPs across Washington and Virginia. And our study found a couple of kind of key highlight results. The first headline finding was that we achieved a 22.9% reduction in all-cause emergency department and hospital visits for patients who were receiving our services compared to a matched non-activated control group. And within that reduction, you know, we saw a nearly 49% reduction in avoidable hospital visits and a 20-ish percent reduction in avoidable ED visits. So those are just, you know, really huge results. We're really excited about those. Another focus of our program is around improving HEDIS quality metrics that we're contractually responsible for. So not all of them, but, you know, a select few that MCOs are really focused on. And we found that we were able to improve 7 out of our 9 kind of combined HEDIS quality measures by an average of about 12% absolute percentage points for our population in that year. And then I think another thing that speaks to what Jeremy was just talking about in terms of improving trust and really meeting patients where they are, we also found that we were able to help patients achieve about 63% of their chosen clinical and social goals.
I'm also curious about maybe some of the more subjective feedback that you've received, you know, from patients and the providers with whom they either have been working with or will continue to work with, in addition to Waymark. Just the achievement of particular health goals, I think you cited from the patients, is awesome. But any other kind of subjective feedback that you've gotten around the impact that you're having on how patients are approaching this?
One of the things we're super proud of, and Jeremy, you can give more color commentary to this, is that our CSAT score, customer satisfaction amongst patients, has been in the high 80s to 90% kind of from the very beginning. And Jeremy, maybe you can chip in a little bit more around the provider feedback. But I think in addition, you know, to these other outcomes that we talked about, doing that all while patients are pleased with their experience, getting value from their experience is really important to us too.
On the provider side, I think similar feedback has been positive. You know, candidly, I think it took us a little bit longer to kind of get there and earn trust. I think we ran into some natural skepticism, right? We're an external company. You know, everything we're doing is free to patients and providers. It seems like it should be such a clear win-win. But the reality is that we partner with providers who are really passionate about the work they're doing. They're serving Medicaid patients for a reason. And we really had to earn their trust by showing that we were going to advocate for and support their patients in all the ways that they would themselves. And so it took a little bit longer. But once they started hearing feedback from their patients about the work that we were doing, or just saw the fruits of our labor and our communications with them, that's what really turned the corner. It's what started to generate a little bit more of a stream of referrals from our provider partners. And so now the feedback that we get is really positive, and we've gone out of our way to really try and flex our model where we can to meet the needs of our provider partners. I do think that's a challenge looking forward, right? Because the results that Hannah shared were from year one. We had one MCO partner in Washington, one MCO partner in Virginia, and a handful of provider partners in each of those markets. We're now operating with multiple MCO partners, more provider partners, expanding to other markets. And so we're kind of figuring out how do we make sure that we're still flexing to the needs of our provider partners, but within kind of a bounded menu of options so that we're able to scale in a way that isn't kind of crazy making for our teams.
So you mentioned some quick wins. Give us some examples of what that means and how that's worked out for your patients.
I think this is such a critical component to how we work to build trust. And so, again, I think the quick win can really vary depending on the patient. We find also that it depends a little bit on the care team member and their expertise as they're doing that outreach, you know, both because the original reason they're outreaching is changing a little bit, but, you know, where they're really comfortable making that commitment. And so what we try to do with a quick win is just find something that seems really relevant to the patient that they're identifying as a high priority, where we can either check that box really quickly or at least show a very tangible bit of progress by the next time we encounter them. So if that's a week later after their kind of intake appointment with us, we want to be able to show that we hear them. And when we say we're going to do something, we mean it and we're delivering on those results. And so that can be something, you know, really simple, like setting up a ride to an upcoming appointment for somebody and making sure that that follow through happens. It can be something that might be a component of a longer time horizon goal. You know, so a lot of our patients have, say, housing goals. That's a really long-term goal. It's really complicated, you know, but helping them, making that quick win be, you know, we're going to help you parse through this paperwork. We're going to bring you the things that you need to focus on so that we can get this paperwork filed with the appropriate local housing authority to get you on the right list and like start this process off. And sometimes it's, I would say, clinical as well, you know, making a quick referral to our pharmacy team to address this really urgent medication access issue that the patient, you know, can't access something because there's a prior authorization issue. Our pharmacist team can help resolve that.
And one other place where I think this concept pops up to build off the last piece that Hannah shared is I think having our pharmacy technicians actually initiate outreach based off of a trigger they may see in the claims data or that our risk algorithm may pop up, you know, a patient isn't filling a really critical medication, for example, and kind of using that to get a foot in the door and then introducing the broader care model. So, hey, can I help you overcome this immediate term barrier that we're seeing around accessing a critical medication? Oh, by the way, we also actually have community health workers who can help you with X, Y, and Z. We have therapists who can provide free therapy and support you on X, Y, and Z things. So I think that's another way in which this concept of an early win or building trust early shows up in our model as well.
What's it going to take for a model like this to scale? It sounds like the results are there, the proof points are starting to show, but as you said, it gets more complicated the more we get involved. So what do you guys see as kind of the keys to scaling the model?
Yeah, I kind of think of like, what are the kind of facts on the ground that have to be in place? And then what's the enabling infrastructure nationally? So on the former, I think we are really optimistic because we don't need any sort of hyper-specific policy environment or legislative change. We really rely most critically on just willing and mission-aligned partners, particularly on the provider side. So what that means operationally is, you know, we work really closely with our provider partners to set up things like supplemental quality data feeds, appointment and EHR access for our teams, in some cases, collaborative practice agreements to make sure that folks like our clinical pharmacists can really do things like titrate medicines between visits, get the most out of our clinical care delivery teams. The other piece in terms of facts on the ground is just, and this is something we're actively continuing to explore, like what are the contracting structures that we need to have in place to support a broader set of provider partners? When we launched, we found that oftentimes we would run into kind of minimalist, maybe value-based contracts, upside only, maybe a given provider would some years would do well, some years wouldn't, but there wasn't necessarily resourcing or staffing tied to these value-based contracts. Maybe it wasn't moving the needle really meaningfully, but it was kind of boxing out the ability for other value-based arrangements to be structured for that population, for that provider. And so just one of the things that we've been exploring just in the last year plus as we contemplate much more significant growth here in the years ahead is how do we kind of figure out other contracting structures that allow us to fit in with existing value-based arrangements, but still make sure that our incentives are aligned and our model is able to be delivered just to a broader swath of provider partners. And then the other huge piece is our technology infrastructure. You know, the model is, again, fundamentally and necessarily local and human. So we think about technology as an enabler of humans delivering care to other humans. Specifically, we have custom-built technology that really improves the targeting. So who are we outreaching to? Are we outreaching to the right folks? That's where our risk algorithm signal comes in. So you can imagine if a standard kind of risk algorithm might identify, say, 30% of the patients that we think would benefit from our model. We published in a peer-reviewed journal earlier this year on Signal, our rising risk model, and it has kind of a 90% predictive value in terms of identifying the rising risk patients that are a good fit for our model. That difference, every 10 calls that our team is making, if 7 out of 10 of them in a traditional kind of risk stratification model aren't really reaching the folks who we think we can actually benefit, whereas with our model, only 1 out of 10 are. That is a massive improvement in terms of efficiency, especially in a population that's really hard to reach. Every one of those phone calls is really critical that it's focused on the right patient. Another area that our technology is a really critical enabler of scale is just in reducing the time that our teams spend on administrative tasks that takes them away from investing their time in what they do best, which is working with patients. So in our case, that looks like automating some of the initial outreach attempts, automating scheduling where we can, having a custom-built CRM that's tailor-made for our population so that our teams aren't kind of running upstream in an EHR that isn't really designed for the population that we serve. So that's both a driver of efficiency and of just team satisfaction, frankly. And then the third and final piece is just supporting high quality care delivery. So all the work that Hannah and her team have done around mapping out kind of evidence-based clinical pathways for our teams to follow, you know, making sure that our technology is kind of nudging our teams in the right direction. So maybe it's suggesting a clinical pathway based off of what we're seeing in the claims data, or suggesting a CBO or a referral destination based off of the feedback that our team has given in the past about where they've been successful referring patients, those kinds of things. So I think that kind of national infrastructure on the technology side is also something that we envision really helping us just scale this to be able to serve more and more patients.
Thank you for listening to the Oliver Wyman Health Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the global management consulting firm, Oliver Wyman. For more insights on the business of transforming healthcare, visit our online publication, health.oliverwyman.com.